This is Pollinizer.
And you are in the Hive.
Hi, I'm Bronwyn Clune, and welcome to the Pollinizer podcast. Today, as a special guest, I have Mark Pesci, who is best well known as the founder of VRML. Is that correct? VRML?
Virtual Reality Modeling Language.
And Mark will speak to us a little bit about that and his new project called Plexus, which we're all keen to hear about. But probably first, Mark, let's talk a little bit about VRML, what that is, and how you came to invent it.
Well, I mean, VRML is to 3D what HTML is to 2D. So HTML describes the layout of elements on a web page, you know, where everything goes, why it's there, what it looks like, what elements are associated with it, color, text, blah, 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 blah. And so VRML does the same thing for three dimensions. And of course, in three dimensions, you're basically working with primitives, you're working with basic shapes, triangles, and you're describing triangles. But if you get enough triangles together, you can create a human face, or you can create a house, or you can create a tree, whatever you like. And so in some sense, VRML is all about the arrangement of triangles and the sources of light that fall on them to give them particular colors. And then beyond that, adding interactivity to it. It took us a while to get to interactivity. The first version of VRML didn't have interactivity in it. Then we stopped and started again and got a version that was interactive.
So how did you come about inventing something like that? I mean, was it always an interest of yours?
I've been working in virtual reality from around the middle of 1990. And I had a startup company. The startup company kind of imploded, kind of spectacularly. And after this sort of flaming wreckage had departed, I was sitting around with my same ideas about doing what we would call networked virtual reality, left on my own to do it. And I was coming across this thing called the World Wide Web. This was in the middle of 1993, and I had a sort of moment where I went, well, if I take my work I'm trying to do in virtual reality to make it networked, and I can hijack this World Wide Web thing to do the networking, well, then I've solved the harder part of my problem, and bammo. And that was where the idea came from. Now, I had really no conception that it was going to sort of take off, and for, you know, a year it was flavor of the month on the web. It was going to be the great big new thing. It isn't anymore, but for a while it looked like it was going to be the great big shiny new thing on the web.
So how, I guess that comes back to another question about how do you take, you know, people have great ideas all the time. Mm. And I guess you're going through this again with Plexus. How do you go from having an idea and having, and then going through the will to implement it and seeing it through? I mean, that's a big...
For me, and I think being on the New Inventors TV show, I see this in a lot of other inventors. When you get a real invention, it doesn't leave you alone. That's the thing. Day or night, waking, sleeping, it doesn't matter. I woke up and my first thought this morning, like before consciousness had really engaged, my first thought was this new way I could use Plexus to talk to Facebook. I mean, I didn't ask for this. It's an obsession. And I think that's the thing about it, that in some ways, bringing an invention to life is a way of exorcising the obsession. It gets it out of you, because trust me, I never want to look at 3D again. I mean, that's not really
fun.
But, you know, after a decade of doing work with VRML, I was like, I'm done here.
We'll talk about Plexus in a minute, but I guess then the question is, do you think it's about the idea or the person, or is it both?
I think it's probably a combination of them, because the same idea can occur to someone else and it won't go to fruition. And so I think it's the right idea falling on the right person with the right skills and the right vision to be able to make it all happen. You know, you have people who have lots of great ideas but never actually make anything. I get lots of ideas all the time, but I don't normally realize any of them. It's only these very weird, rare ideas that will fall on me and completely colonize my life.
Yeah, and I guess you have the means to making them reality, though, because you have some... You know, you're obviously able to code, to think about things in that sort of context.
If it's simple computer hardware and relatively sophisticated computer software, then I have a complete range of skills. I mean, I've been coding for 32 years now, and I've been playing with hardware since I was like 14 years old in the basement and going through all my dad's old electronic engineering notebooks.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us a little bit about Plexus, which has been something you've talked a little bit about on Twitter, so people who follow you there may know about it. But it's quite an interesting story about how this idea actually came about. And it has some has Facebook really to thank for it, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, it comes back to this idea that there's an irritation that you're trying to get rid of. I mean, with VRML, it was the irritation of trying to do network VR. Well, okay, wait, I could hijack the web and find an easy way to do it. With Plexus, it was that I really wanted to get rid of Facebook. I wanted to just lose Facebook out of my life because I don't really trust the organization, the company of Facebook, with my social graph. Okay, so I could pull out of Facebook, and in fact, what I did was then set up a Posterous account so that I could keep sharing all the media that I was sharing on Facebook, and then I posted to my profile before I deleted it, hey folks, I'm going to be quitting Facebook. I'm going to be doing it later on this week. Here's a link to where you can find me. And when people bothered to answer, they sort of treated it as if it were my wake. Oh, we're so sorry to see you go. We've reconnected after so many years. And, you know, sometimes I would join in on these threads and I'd go, well, look it. I've just told you where I'm going to be. And in fact, this came from a fellow named Bill McCluskey, who's one of the people I know from the VRML days. He was at SGI. I said, I've told you where you can find me. And he's just like, I'm sorry, man, that's too hard. If I had to do that for everyone, you know, someone would be over there and someone would be over here and someone would be over here. I could never do all of that. And that's when the light bulb went off. And I was like, wait a minute. He's talking about something that's too hard because there's no tool to do it. Yeah. And that's the basic idea of Plexus, is that it allows you to use any social media, whether it's Facebook or Flickr or Twitter or, you know, anything, Brand X social media, and it will tie all the pieces together for you. So in some ways, I'm starting to think of it, it's starting to get this idea in my head that it's almost the next place that email is going to go. Because email, you think of it, well, it uses a very specific protocol, so I can talk to you or you can talk to me. This is sort of like using anything that's available to talk to anyone about anything or everyone about everything.
So what is it? Is it a website in itself? What is it?
It's basically a tiny little piece of software that you're supposed to run yourself. That's the idea, is that it's personal, it's portable, and it's private, so you have control over it. I think that eventually it will simply be running in your mobile and you won't think about it. It'll be one of the processes that are running in your mobile in the background, and it's basically the traffic cop. And when you say, okay, I want to talk to Mark and I want to talk to him by sending him a photo, Plexus will figure out, well, if you're talking to Mark and you want to send him a photo, generally you want to do that. You've decided you're going to do that via Flickr, so I'm going to send it to him via Flickr. On the other hand, if you're going to talk to Mick, all right, and you're going to send him something while you're in the same company, you might send that via Yammer because you're on the same Yammer channel. And so Plexus will be a traffic cop and figure out, and Plexus will also be listening, so that if I want to talk to you, Plexus will be listening for me talking to you, so that it can then pass that information off to you so that you can see it. You don't have to worry about any of this. You set it all up, but once you set it all up, it's just churning away in the background. So think of it as what happens when your address book that's sitting on your mobile gets hit by lightning and becomes alive, because it becomes a very active participant in your communication.
So let's go back to the Facebook problem. You don't need to be a member of Facebook then to communicate with your friends on Facebook.
Well, this is the problem that I solved this morning, as a matter of fact. What you can do, and I think what you'll need to do, is then create a faux account, which will only have a connection to the buddy that you want to talk to on Facebook. All right, and you'll do that, create a faux account for every person that you'll want to talk to on Facebook. And that way Facebook doesn't know who you are, doesn't have a copy of your social graph, and only has all of these individual connections which don't look like anything.
Is that something you're going to have to actually go and do, or will Plexus do that for you?
Well, the front end. Now, Plexus will manage it once it's all set up, but setting it up will require a little work, so there'll be an interface, which I'm calling Safebook. It turns out that Safebook's already been taken as a name by a Christian right-wing organization.
Awesome.
So they can give you a pedophile-free space for your children. But nonetheless, something like Safebook. So it'll be a front end. You'll say, hi, I want to talk to my friend Gregory. You know, it'll go and find it. It'll go and create the necessary accounts. You might have to type in some capture codes because, you know, you need to do that. And it'll set the whole thing up, and then you won't have to think about it anymore, and you'll be talking to him over Facebook. But Facebook won't really know anything about you.
So your initial concern for this was really about privacy.
It's not privacy per se. The social graph, and I mean, again, I've been doing social media research now for coming on to 7 years. The social graph is the single most important thing we have. We've only known about social graphs for about 3 years, all right? But already now they're starting to do lots of research. Social graphs can cause smoking to spread. They can cause obesity to spread. They can also cause anti-smoking to spread. They can cause weight loss to spread. They can cause divorce to spread. That one was just published about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's how powerful.
I think we all knew that anyway, didn't we?
We see it among our friends, but now we've got like psychologists actually doing the research work here. So we now know that social graphs are these incredibly important things. If they're that important and they're that valuable to me, I don't want anyone else to have their dirty little fingers on it. What I want to do is build a system that allows me and anyone else who wants to keep that as private as they can.
But if social graphs aren't actually identifying the members, the people that make them up, aren't they a snapshot into humanity that we didn't have before?
Oh, absolutely. They are. And I'm not saying that you wouldn't share your graph with someone for a period of time for a specific reason. But the thing is, on Facebook, they own your social graph. The thing that's the sort of real trigger about Facebook is you cannot export your social graph. When I was quitting Facebook, in order to export my social graph, you know what I did? I took a look at my friend's page, the first page of it, printed it out as a PDF. Second page, printed it out as a PDF, so on and so forth, for all, you know, 15 pages of it. That's the only record I have of my Facebook social graph, because Facebook wasn't going to hand me, say, a comma delimited file with it, because it was too easy. It makes it too easy to be able to walk out the door, and they don't want that. They think that the social graph is theirs. It isn't.
So what is the problem you're solving then for people?
Well, the thing of it is that Facebook also likes to see itself as the center of the universe. There is no center of the social media universe. So Plexus is plumbing. It connects everything to everything else. You want to connect to Facebook, you want to connect to Twitter, you want to connect to Flickr, you want to connect to Buzz, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't really matter. We'll plumb it all together for you and then make that feel seamless for you through an interface. So you don't have to sort of think about all the different mechanisms you're using to communicate. You'll just communicate.
And is it an application we pay for?
Well, again, Plexus itself, the kernel of it is open source. I want you to think of it sort of a little bit as the Linux kernel. It's an open source application. But it doesn't specify anything about how it looks and how you interact with it, the front end. It provides an API, in fact. One of the design changes I just made is anyone can roll their own API. So you can have as many different APIs to Plexus as you like. So you can talk to it any way you want to. So the tools that people use for talking to it, that's completely open. Obviously, there'll be public domain tools. There'll probably be software as a service tools. There'll probably be programs, apps for your iPhone or whatever that will talk to Plexus. So I hope that that's where the commercial ecology lives.
Okay, in people taking the open API and using it in other ways.
Yeah.
I guess in the same way a lot of people have built so many things off Twitter, which
exactly.
is really a very simple thing.
Exactly.
So it's open source. You're obviously doing a lot of work yourself. Mm. Have you got anyone else helping you? Or?
Well, we've got the blog. The blog is plexus.relationalspace.org.
Maybe just spell it out.
So P-L-E-X-U-S, plexus.relationalspace.org.
Okay, I'll put the link to it in the bottom of the podcast.
And so come by the blog, you know, check it out. We've got a lot of, you know, we've got 30 people on the blog constantly listening in and commenting. We've got 50 people on the Plexus Dev Twitter feed. And so it's a community of people who are more or less watching what I'm doing right now. I went around and asked a lot of people. I introduced Plexus at the Python Developers Conference here in Australia. And everyone was like, oh, this is great. And I was like, great, will you help? And they're like, well, we got other things going on. So that's fine. You know, in some ways, because the idea is in my head and the architecture is in my head, what I have to do is get it all out there as a prototype. Say, okay, here's how all the pieces fit together. I didn't necessarily do the best job in the world, but it works.
Yeah.
Now we can all take these pieces apart and improve them, and someone can take one away. And I think that's the way this has to work. I mean, Linus did the first version of the Linux kernel, right? You know, and then eventually people came along and did it. I don't mind the fact, I mean, when I realized I was going to be doing all the initial work on the prototype was myself, and I sort of satisfied, I was settled with it. I was like, okay, that's the way it's got to be. There's a certain purity around that. For me, the big issue is now how do I squeeze out time? Like today I was supposed to be at a conference, and I was just like, you know what? I'm not presenting at the conference today. I presented yesterday. I have other things to do, so I'm home and doing errands and writing code, sort of between the two, when I'm not being interviewed.
So it's not so much that you want to do it on your own, it's just at the moment that's your resource.
Yes. At the same time, what has been great is that there have been people to bounce things off of. So when I get an idea, like this idea about Facebook this morning, I bounced it off. Now there's a conversation going on the blog about how that might work out and why it works or why it won't scale. Tony Parisi, the fellow I did the Verma work with, he's been amazing because he's been able to ask questions that will split my head wide open. And he's consistently been doing it. Thank God he's on holidays right now because I'd be bleeding from the ears.
Yeah.
So people have been really helpful. And in some sense, I think that's probably better for me. Because if I said, okay, I need you to write a module and here's what it does, well, the process of me defining what it does is actually probably about as much work as writing the module right now. So it's almost better for me to write this first draft. And then it will be out there and other people will be able to take a look at it and say, okay, I understand. I can go and make this part better.
So I guess in some ways you're iterating it all the time in your own mind.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's and that's, again, the madness that comes with the invention is that the inventingness never really stops until you manage to get it all out there.
Well, thank you, Mark Pesci, Mad Inventor, for coming on the Pollinizer podcast. Maybe that can be how you introduce yourself from now on in.
Mad scientist.
I think it kind of works. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.